Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
What's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mama Momo's in the house on a Wednesday. Hello, Momo.
Like literally and figuratively in the house, right? That's what we're all.
Yeah.
I'm like coming to you live from my bedroom.
There you go. Bergman too, not your bedroom.
No. That would be a whole different show.
Yeah, Bergman is in his own bedroom. Bergman doesn't leave his jammies. He's in his jammies all day.
Why should I? Have you turned on the light?
there's a light on today. Not both, just one, but the main one's on.
That's good. I'm really glad to hear that.
Good.
Normally I'm in the office, but Daniel's figured out how to open those doors. So I'm now hiding in the bedroom where we have more locks on the doors.
We can
have little commercial interruptions, right?
Yeah, for sure. By the way, Ryan Russillo will be one of our guests on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, our former colleague at ESPN of The Ringer. You know, he's super tied into the NBA, the NFL, and I don't know anyone that watches more college football particularly than Ryan, so it's a great time to have him with all the NBA stuff that we could be. We're getting some news, Momo, which is fun. Like, there's now some of it is created, but I don't care. Like, I'll take it. You know, I feel like you and I can discuss it and dissect it every which way till Sunday, you know?
I'm gonna tell you a little story. Okay, I'm not gonna name names, but I think you could probably guess this one. Okay, I remember. You know, I tend to like we all come across little morsels here and there, like little news that's in the wind, and sometimes we chase it down. And other times, it's just better to feed it to a colleague who like they're in that sport or it's a different sport than what you cover or whatever it is. So I remember calling a colleague about just some stuff I heard. I thought it was kind of like not that big a deal, but, you know, might be a big deal there. So I'll feed it to him. And the guy was like, oh, it's really good. Thank you. It's really good. I was like, dude, it's just a small little story. And the guy goes, look, we're not throwing any fish back. Look, we don't throw any fish back.
That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, this time – any news is news. We can talk about it all, right? Like this is,
yeah.
I heard your man Mike Malone. Man, he was on one of those Zoom calls, and I think he forgot he was on with reporters.
So you've talked to him before, Michael Malone, who is the head coach of the Denver Nuggets, is an easy guy to talk to. Like he will go he gave us the straight talk. Brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high speed data, 2G for $45 a month, saving you half the cost of big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at StraightTalk.com. So. In this day and age of where there's no news, we need news. And Michael Malone, as Ramona said, may have just forgotten who the hell he was talking to because it's all over there now. He was talking to a group of reporters, and here's the quote. Michael Malone said the thing. Here is the thing today. When it comes to Jordan versus LeBron, quote, it's always an ongoing argument about who's the GOAT. Michael obviously is up there and is the greatest of all time, Malone said Tuesday on a Zoom call with reporters. There are not many Michael Jordans out there. I coached LeBron James for 5 years and have a great relationship with him. Maybe not after this quote. LeBron did not have the same mindset or killer mentality that Michael Jordan is supposed to have. But LeBron James is arguably the greatest of all time as well. Michael Jordan was not just a great player. He would reach into your chest and pull your heart out if he had to win the game. It's like Mortal Kombat. You don't see that really often. He had that killer mindset and brought it every single night. That's why all of these many years later, he's the greatest of all time. So, Ramona, if you are LeBron James, who Michael Malone did coach for 5 years as an assistant, who he does like, right? Like we've seen them embrace and talk when they play each other. My guess is today, LeBron... maybe not mad, but probably irked this morning. Yes?
Super interesting quote, George. Okay? If I'm LeBron, I'm like, whoa, Mike? Michael? I'm not even going to call you Michael. I'm going to call you Mike after that quote, right? I don't blame Malone for saying it because it's actually an opinion that a lot of people have, right? He's probably right. But it's one of those things that, like, politically – most coaches, most people in the modern NBA who have to face LeBron James reasonably all the time, right? They don't say anything like that ever. They steer clear of quotes like that ever. And so while I appreciate his honesty, it's a little bit interesting that he would even go there, because you might be playing them in the playoffs in a couple of weeks or a couple of months or whenever that's going to be.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Is it really fair to say something like that, like LeBron lacks killer instinct? Now, and maybe that's not what he said. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't say he doesn't have killer instinct. He says he doesn't have the same killer mentality that Michael Jordan had. And look, LeBron is a different guy. And it's kind of like, you know, the first year, Ramona, when LeBron got here last season.
Yeah.
I feel like you and I and Windhorst and a lot of people who were around here who had been around LeBron, right, any extended period of time, were trying to explain to Laker fans, okay, you're going to need to understand this dude's not Kobe. He's not wired the same way.
Yep.
He's amazing in his own right and perhaps even better, but it's just going to be different than what you're used to. And I think it took fans here a while to kind of figure that out too.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And you know, one of the things that I'm going to stand up for LeBron a little bit, okay? Like, I usually, you know, go on the Michael Jordan, Kobe side of things because I like that killer instinct. I like that, you know, I like that persona that they adopted. But one of the best stories I've read about LeBron, it was pretty early in his career, and it's our friend Lee Jenkins, who now works for the Clippers, but he was a writer at Sports Illustrated for a long time. And it was a story about how, like, LeBron sort of has this, he's wired differently. He's not wired to say, I want to be the guy at the end of the game who takes the last shot. Not, maybe the last 10 shots, right? Like, it's not even one shot, it's 10 shots. LeBron is wired to elevate his teammates. LeBron is wired in a completely different way of, he's more magic, right? He's more like, I'm going to be the point guard that makes everybody great, rather than the assassin who's going to rip your heart out and that just going up against him is intimidating, right? That's kind of never been LeBron. And I will say this, as you watch the Jordan documentary, okay, as this unfolds, it does give me an appreciation for LeBron James, because you know, you could reasonably come away from the Jordan documentary thinking, did Mike just retire because he got tired of the pressure and media? Like, that's kind of twice, really? I mean, it kind of feels like that. I mean, you know, like, we've seen Kevin Durant have, like, sort of media meltdowns, and you can tell that he doesn't do well with that constant scrutiny and constant fishbowl that was around the Warriors and, you know, around him all the time. It would be like Kevin Durant just, like, up and retiring. I mean, like, there's this feeling about, you know, Mike retiring the first time and the second time that maybe he just got tired of it all. And went away. And I don't know, look, LeBron James has been the most overcovered, over-scrutinized player probably ever, because we have the modern media landscape, you know, throughout his entire career, where it's 24/7 Twitter, you know, SportsCenter, all around the clock, like, picking apart his every move. And, like, I don't know, if you think about LeBron James has had to, I don't want to say endure, but, like, the media landscape that he has thrived in and played his entire career in, like, I don't know, I have a pretty hearty appreciation for that, because never run from it, right?
Yeah he's embraced it, actually, embraced in a lot of ways.
He's learned how to manage it, control it,
outside of the first year of the first year after the decision, he's completely embraced it.
And when you watch the Michael documentary, you'll see, I mean, him stepping away from to go play baseball was a lot about his father being murdered, and he needed a break, and that was really hard on him. But he even says in one of the episodes, to his biographer, there's a guy who wrote a Michael Jordan biography who he's really close to. He told him after the Dream Team, after 1992, that he was thinking about retiring, that the only reason he even came back for 1993 is because Magic and Larry had never done a three-peat. And in order to be considered among the greatest of all time, or the best, you know, as good as those guys, he wanted to go for a three-peat and do something they had never done. You know, he was even thinking about it back in 92. And so I don't know. I mean, what do you make of that? Like that, you know, that's how jarring the landscape was, or the pressure was on Jordan. Whereas like LeBron has, you know, if anything, sometimes I think he tries to create attention around him.
Yeah. Yeah. If anything, he likes to stir the pot yeah. a little bit, right? Like yeah. some of the passive aggressive comments. Yeah. And by the way, though, I'll answer the Jordan stuff first, but I want to go back to the LeBron yeah. stuff with the killer instinct, because I do think that stuff gets overblown in some yep. way, shape or form too. But yeah, clearly Michael Jordan dealt with the pressures of it. Now Michael Jordan loved the competitive part of it, because I remember, mm-hmm. man, it was easily like 10 or 12 years ago now, maybe, where Dan Le Batard went on a trip for ESPN the magazine with mm-hmm. Michael Jordan to China.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And he talked about, like, at that time, like, Jordan was quoted as saying, like, that he kind of is a little, like, jealous of Kobe at the time and LeBron, because they're still young, right? And he's like, I would love to play those guys or play against those guys. Like, he still had the competitive fire, but I think you're right. It's all the other stuff, right, mm-hmm. that became the issue for him, that surrounded him, that would have only been worse in today's day and age, for sure, yeah. As opposed to back then when we could hide that he was gambling in Atlantic City before playing the Knicks in a playoff game. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it just was a different era. And as far as LeBron, look, I, you know, he gets nailed for the stuff that we were talking about, right? Like, you don't hit no clutch gene, right? Skip yeah. Bayless infamously saying that stuff. But I vehemently remember, okay, that in game 7 of the 2013 finals, in a nip and tuck game against the Spurs, it was like a 1 or 2 possession game.
Yep.
He hit an elbow jumper from the right elbow with less than 20 seconds to go mm-hmm. to basically seal the championship for the Heat, gave them a 5-point lead or a 6-point lead with like 20 seconds to go. And he, you know, he kind of did the, you know, the not the fist pump, but kind of like you're pulling the
yep.
the horn on a tractor trailer or something. Like, he did that yep. kind of fist pump where he's like, I know I got it now. Finally, I hit that shot. Now people can shut the hell up. And the other part of it is, too, is, yeah, it wasn't a shot, but that chase down block of Andre Iguodala, that's clutch. I don't care what anybody says to me. And that's killer instinct, too.
So I agree with all that, but he had to almost learn that. Like, that didn't.
Sure.
You know, if you look at Michael's story arc as a player, Michael's essential nature, Kobe's essential nature is just to be, you know, the guy, the man in the arena. Like, they want to be the man at the end of the game, take all the shots. And if anything, they had to learn how to, like, involve their teammates, right? They had to, like, learn to share. Whereas I think LeBron's essential nature is to share, and he had to learn how to be the guy. So they're almost backwards, right? They mm-hmm. almost went through on these backwards, you know, these opposite career tracks. But, you know, look, it's all going to come down to rings. And when we have this greatest player of all time debate, and, you know, Michael's got 6, right? Like, LeBron just got a ways to go. And I, that's why I think what's going on this season with, you know, everything being postponed and the uncertainty around whether we come back, and if we come back, what, you know, how are we going to look at this season? This really does affect his legacy. You know, he's on a hunt, right? He's got to win 3 more to be in that same conversation. And I think that just physically, the way he looked, the way he was playing this year, he was right there. And I know that's got to be, you know, somewhere when we all allow ourselves to have selfish thoughts at this time, right? Like, you know, do you allow yourself selfish thoughts? Maybe we don't acknowledge them publicly because what's going on in the world and the people who are having, like, real problems and real issues.
Yeah, yeah.
But we all have those selfish thoughts sometimes,
them,
no right?
doubt. No if, doubt.
If in LeBron's moments of those, I mean, of course he's got to be thinking that. Like, man, you know, he got himself in an amazing shape. He got a team together. They got him playing at an incredible level. They were right there ready to win a championship. And it's like, boom, 2020 happens, right?
Yeah.
This pandemic happens. Like, what's he going to do about that? What's going to be, you know, and I think that there's kind of nothing you can say or do. It just is what it is. And we all are sort of dealing with that in the spirit of, you know, much larger issues in the world and accepting that. But yeah, this is going that, you know, LeBron's legacy is going to be measured in rings. It just is.
Yeah. Yeah. We're clearly all managing and he's doing it too, but you're right. It is going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. And I want to get into that with you a little later in the show about what kind of the landscape is for the NBA and a possible return. We'll do that in a bit. Thank you, Michael Malone, though, for providing content for us today. Denver Nuggets head coach. We appreciate it. I will open it up to the phones. We like to do that at 877-710-ESPN. Is it fair that LeBron gets criticized for his quote-unquote lack of killer instinct? Is that a fair assessment to bestow upon him? 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. And also coming up next, everybody's telling us stories about them being traded somewhere else, and we would have never guessed these superstar trades that could have happened but never happened. Magic Johnson to the Knicks? Was that a real thing? We'll get to that in a second. Sedona with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out with us. Happy to have her aboard today, all presented by Progressive Insurance. Home of the Quote Explorer, Home Quote Explorer. It's changing the way that you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, save both time and money. You can learn more at progressive.com. It is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. Momo, did you sleep through the earthquake yesterday, or did you feel it?
No, I am awake at night. So I was on the phone with a friend, and my friend Stacey Pressman. She lives on the west side, so she was like, "Dude, do you feel that? Is that earth? Is that earthquake?" I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about. Like, didn't make it out here." And I was like, we didn't feel it out in the valley, really. Greg, do you feel it? You live in the valley.
Yeah, I was sleeping, and I felt the shake, but I just went back to bed.
Maybe we just live on bedrock out here. I live in Chatsworth, so like maybe Chatsworth's just like hard ground. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't feel it.
I was watching The Dark Knight last night.
Okay.
And because all those movies are on right now, those Nolan Batman movies. And,
did you go backwards? You watched
Dark Knight
Rises
the night before was Dark Knight. I mean, I've seen them, Greg, so it doesn't really matter if I watch them out of order. And it was on, so I'm done. And it was like 11:30, and then I stayed up for a little while long. And I probably went to bed maybe like 20 minutes later, and I fell asleep fairly quickly. And yeah, I woke up this morning, and ESPN does a really good job of sending us alerts, right, when these things happen, like those emails or texts or whatever, or both. And I woke up this morning and I saw the email. I'm like, 12:15, huh? Yeah, I must have just fallen asleep. I didn't even feel a thing. So yeah, I feel like that is the true measure of whether you're an Angelino or not at that point, is if you just sleep through the earthquake.
Yeah, sleep through, or like, you know, the real true measure, okay, is when we all feel an earthquake, if you could call how big it is, like within a couple of percentage points, a couple of points.
Yeah.
Like if you can feel that earthquake and you'd be like, 3.6.
Yeah.
and then you check, and there's laquakebot.com, you know, like you'll find that right away. And so you can find out how big it is like within seconds now. But at the time, like when I was growing up, when we would have earthquakes, like I'd be like, 4.2. 5.1. Oh, yes, 5. That was over 5. Yeah, that was over. And then you'd see, and then it would take like a few hours before Caltech would weigh in on how big it was.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's kind of like sport. Like, could you call it? That's how you really know it's on here.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, my friend texted me this morning. He's like, "Hey, man, you're okay with the earthquake?" I'm like, 3.7, dude. Like, stop. Like, that's nothing.
Like, well, and the thing is, I'm going to say this. This is the real reason, the real way you know you're real. I'm going to do this so that everybody can hear me do it, okay? I'm knocking on wood, because you don't tempt the earthquake gods, okay?
Yeah.
Like, when we start laughing at the 3.8 and be like, "Oh, that was nothing," like, the earth will just be like, "Okay, let me show you a 4.7 now," right? Like, like, it's just kind of like you don't trash talk.
Yeah. Well, especially because, you know, the weather's getting warmer, so that it is prime for stuff like that, right?
Well, like, plus it's like, you know, this is 2020. This is the year where, like, the earth is angry at us, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is, you know, like, all the Twitter was really funny afterwards. You checked, you went back to bed, right?
I was in bed. I didn't see it till this morning.
Right. Yeah. So Twitter was really funny last night with the earthquake. It was like, everybody was like, "Well, we're all home from the pandemic. Now there's an earthquake. Like, we get it. We get it. Earth is angry with us."
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. Let's go to the phones here real quick. We got Greg in Culver City. Greg, what do you got, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? What's going on? Hopefully you guys are safe and well.
You too.
Thanks, man. Just really fast. I mean, I vividly remember early on in LeBron's career, the 25-point straight double OT game against the Pistons. I mean, if that doesn't tell you what clutch looks like, that's clutch for what, two overtimes, 25 straight points with a team that, I mean, Paul Silas coached team that barely had a few guys on it. I mean, if that doesn't tell you what kind of player LeBron James is. I don't know what does. I mean, and not to mention, I know we use clutch as like the metric for clutch is a shot make, is a shot that is made. But at the same time, clutch can be anything. Clutch can be you locking down your player for four quarters. That's just as clutch as a person taking the shot.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, and I don't think that gets discussed enough. And thanks for the call, Greg. Stay safe. And yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure, I think that was Mike Brown. I think Silas might have been gone. But Ramona, he was 22 or 23 years old tops when he beat that Pistons team, scoring those 25 points.
Yeah, and he was young. Like, you know, we've had a chance to like, go back and watch young LeBron lately because they've been showing all the classic games. Like, it's like a different guy. Like, I mean, he really is young LeBron. He's like skinny and you can, I mean, he's still like built, you know, like he's got muscle, but he's nothing like he is today.
Yeah.
And he had that instinct in him. And like, I really think that when I watched LeBron play and I felt this like pretty much his entire career, LeBron reminds me a whole lot more of Magic Johnson than he does of Michael Jordan. Like he's just Magic was a guy who made everybody better. Magic could trash talk. Magic could be mean on the court. He had killer instinct, but like he was, you know, the facilitator of one of the greatest offenses in history, right? And it was, you know, he's a facilitator, the guy who elevates everyone. And I think that like LeBron doesn't get credit because you're comparing apples to oranges because they're just not wired. You know, they're just literally not constructed on the same manufacturing line. Like that's just not, it's just a different guy.
For sure, 100%. Speaking of Magic, though, did you see this story in The Athletic today about how Magic was quoted in the Daily News in 1996 saying, quote, "I wanted to be with the Knicks, but we couldn't work it out. It was a little bit more than just talk. We had talked about it, what it would take, the whole thing, and the Lakers said no, and that was the bottom line." So it goes into this history. They're like kind of looking through all these different quotes from Magic and Pat Riley and Jerry West at the time to see if it actually happened. And allegedly, according to Lon Rosen, Magic's longtime manager, he said that that it was completely misconstrued, that it was just a conversation between Pat and Magic because Pat was coaching the Knicks at the time and he thought maybe he could help him. And remember, obviously, Magic was not playing at that particular time after he had he had HIV and he had to retire, was forced to retire because of HIV and did come back in the 96 season. But I guess prior to that, he had explored allegedly, trying to come back. And, but Lon denied all of that. He said it was nothing. It was just a conversation amongst friends that the driver had called the New York Post. But now the writers in The Athletic were like, well, we didn't find anything in the New York Post. So it is interesting though, because Jerry West said that it didn't happen. Though there are apparently stories in here that say that, that Magic may have come to Jerry and Jerry said, no shot. He'll never be traded. You know, that's never going to happen. Like, this is just like fun stuff to dig through at a time like this, because everyone's talking about they would have been traded. Shaq apparently said it the other day that he was told before that Pistons series that if they lost, he was out. Magic was trying to get traded to the Knicks to reunite with Riley. But you know, no confirmation from Magic and his side on any of this stuff. It is just a fun time to explore all this stuff.
Well, Magic was the one who kind of spilled the beans. It wasn't just that the New York Post wrote it, right? Didn't he? Isn't he?
Yeah, he told the Daily News in 1996, yes, that he had tried, I guess. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Look, now we have dealt with Magic as an executive for the last few years, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll remember, you know, the time when he told me that, you know, he was recruiting Kawhi Leonard, right? Like he said, Kawhi asked to speak to me and he's going to reach out to Kawhi and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, whoa, what? Like, you're not even working for the Lakers anymore. Remember that? And he was like on record. And I remember asking him, right? Because, you know, you're on the phone with somebody sometimes and you're like, okay, I just want to be clear. Are we on the record for this one? You know, we're on the record for that. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, okay. Right? Like, are we? And it was not exactly what was happening. Like, he was overgeneralizing exactly the conversations he had had. I think he was talking more to, like, Dennis Robertson than he was talking to Kawhi, that he was more sending a message that he would be available if Kawhi wanted to talk to him. I think Dennis was trying to arrange that. I think Magic was also just trying to help the Lakers, and he felt like Kawhi wanted to talk to him as part of that. But, you know, honestly, I think the biggest issue is Magic doesn't care about on the record. He's fine just saying it.
No filter,
man. And yeah. There's a reason why the award in the NBA that is given every year for the player who shows the best cooperation to the media is named for Magic Johnson. It's not just cooperation. That guy, he gives you a lot of stuff.
Yeah, right? there's no doubt.
Yeah, he's not trying to spin it or hide it or anything like that. What he says is what's happened. So if, I'm not calling Lon Rosen out or anything like that, but I didn't cover the team at the time. I'm just saying if Magic said it, I tend to believe it.
Yeah.
I just think he,
yeah.
It might,
I don't think the New York Daily News created the quotes out of nowhere in 1996.
No, he said
yeah.
it. I'm sure he maybe overstated things a little bit, or maybe just kind of oversimplified things. Maybe it wasn't as close to being, it wasn't exactly what he said. Maybe it's just overstating, but Lon Rosen's job is literally to walk back and clean up quotes like that from Magic. He's the agent, right? So I'm sure he did a lot of that back in the day, and he got that call 20 years later to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. Yeah, because apparently they reached out to Magic and they couldn't get him on the record again. And they reached out to Riley at the Heat and they're like, no, Riley's not talking. Like there's no way Riles wants to get involved in something that's 30 years old. There's no chance he wants to deal with that nonsense.
You know what this whole story got me thinking about, though, is how so many things just get lost to history? There's just so many stories that are a really big story for a minute. And then they just kind of go away, the news cycle changes. Yeah. They never come back up. I feel like now that we're all in this timeout and we're all quarantined and stuff, find me on Twitter, find George on Twitter. What are some of the stories that you never felt like you got the real story on, or you always felt was more to that we should go re-examine?
Yeah, hit us up right now, at Sedano, at Ramona Shelburne. Hit us up right now. We'll talk about it on the other side and throughout the show on Twitter, at Sedano, at Ramona Shelburne. Coming up next, though, reunion for Gronk and Brady. But are they starting a movement? We'll tell you what that's all about next. We're back in less than 4 minutes. Sedano, Ramona, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out today, riding shotgun, all presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Ryan Russillo going to join us in 8 minutes. We'll have fun talking to our buddy from The Ringer. We'll talk college football, NBA, and NFL with him. Speaking of the NFL... Mama Momo, we had a reunion, Gronk and Brady. Thanks again for the content. We appreciate it, Gronk and Brady, you guys. But here's the thing, Momo. Reunions don't always go as well as we think, right? Sometimes these reunions make a lot of sense and we all get excited for them. But I would say rarely do they turn out as well as the originals. The sequel's rarely as good as the original.
Right. And what's interesting is Gronk's been away. If you look at him now, doesn't he look like he lost 40 pounds?
Yeah.
He looks like he doesn't have the same muscle tone like he used to. He did that one interview where he said he had lost his joy for life. That's pretty intense, right? So, I just kind of feel like with him, sometimes you come back and you're not always the same guy, you're not always the same persona. And I think that a lot of this reunion, I'm excited for it because I think that they're, a great combination. I'm really curious to see what they become. But I'm also I'm also kind of wondering, what kind of state of mind is Gronk really in?
Right. And by the way, Brady was not that great last year. Now, we can blame it on weapons, but now there's no more blaming it on weapons, especially if they keep O.J. Howard. And they have two tight ends, kind of like what he used to have back in the day with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. Plus, he's got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. He's got real receivers and real weapons to work with. And, Brady last year, after week four, he was the equivalent of Mitchell Trubisky, okay, from a statistical standpoint. So I am curious to see how they're going to look. And maybe Brady, is in a resurgence. But clearly I feel like him and Gronk, the one common thread was that they were tired of Belichick. Jeff Darlington was on SportsCenter yesterday and basically said as much.
Yeah. And I think that that's now reframing this discussion. I think we all already knew that, right? We already knew that, playing for Belichick for all those years was wearing and grating on people. But I think, to actually see Tom leave, to actually see Gronkowski come out of retirement and then want to go play for Tom in Tampa Bay. And then did you see the video that Brady posted on social media this morning?
Yeah.
So Brady's playing the shofar, right? If you, those of you who are Jewish know what that is, that's like this, it's like a ram's horn that we play like on Rosh Hashanah. It's like the new year. And it's what we play to say like, you know, cause he, you know, the new year is here, right? We're all going to celebrate, right?
Yeah. Lashana Tova.
Yeah. And so he plays the shofar and Gronk comes running out of the woods or something. Here comes Gronk, right?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a really fun buddy movie down there in Tampa Bay, right? I really hope they're good. I really hope this works. But I'm not sure because, like, I don't know. Gronk's going to have to get in the gym. You know, he's totally changed since he retired.
Yeah, I do feel like if you give Gronk a little time to put on some weight, I think he'll be just fine throwing up, you know, some 45s on the bench press and eating as much as he has to throw on some weight. But I do think, and let's hear from Jeff Darlington about just how tired it seemed like they grew with the quote-unquote Patriot way.
Mental fatigue was always the big reason why Gronkowski was ultimately done with football. He was done with the Patriot way. He was tired of, quite honestly, playing in that very structured Patriot system. Not necessarily a knock on the Patriots, just the way Gronkowski felt. So now, if he can reinvigorate his career in a place that is far more laid back, yeah, that was when this became truly a no-brainer.
So, Ramona, is this the NFL version of player empowerment, except they're so old now at this stage that this is the problem with the NFL. You can only do this when you're old and can call your shot, unlike in the NBA when you can do it in your prime.
I think that's what this is, honestly. Like, I think they've all been tired of that in New England for a long time. And you know, the way Belichick is, just, it grates on people, especially when you've won yourself and you feel like you know what you need to do in order to win. Like, it's one thing when, you know, you're a young player, you're learning, but when you're Tom, who's like totally self-motivated, knows how to get his body in shape, knows how to prepare for a game, like, you don't need all that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need all of that stuff. And it reminds me kind of like Kobe towards the end of his career. Like, Kobe was just totally on his own. Like, he didn't need coaching. He didn't need a coach to break down film for him. He's breaking down his own film. Like, he studied with Tex Winter. He knows he knows what he did wrong. He knows that. And he would sit there in film session and listen and stuff. I mean, he would say things, but like, he didn't have to be there anymore. And I think there was like almost a recognition, especially the last couple years when they had a really young team. Like, he often was not at those shoot-arounds. He often was not at those film sessions because, you know, it was almost counterproductive to have him there.
Yeah, right? For sure. I get it. Like, you're over it already at that point. All right, coming up next, Ryan Russillo is going to join us. We'll talk to him about the NFL, about this. We'll talk to him about Tua dropping, where the Raiders could go. Could they go quarterback? There's a lot of stuff out there with the draft. And obviously, we'll talk some NBA with Ryan Russillo, our friend from The Ringer. We're back in 2 minutes. There you go, Ramona. There it is. There it is.
That was a good shofar blow. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, Tom Brady and Gronk are reuniting in their buddy cop movie, and Tom Brady's got his shofar ready to roll. By the way, if you miss any one of our interviews during the week, you can check out the entire interview on demand section on the Sedano Show podcast on the ESPN app, brought to you by Capital One Quicksilver Card. Again, with Capital One, you can open a savings account as well with a rate 5 times the national average. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC. Tune into The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. Series continues Sunday at 6 p.m. on ESPN television, and listen to the wrap-up show with myself and Alan Sliwa on the ESPN Los Angeles Twitter account immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm, AT&T, Cincoro Tequila, and our friends at Coors Light. Speaking of friends, our buddy Ryan Russillo joins us now from The Ringer. Make sure you subscribe to his podcast, The Ryan Russillo Show. And of course, he's on Sundays with Bill Simmons on the Bill Simmons podcast on the BS Report. So, Ryan, what do you make of the sequel of the buddy cop movie of Gronk and Tom Brady? Because the sequels aren't always as good.
Yeah, but I mean, it was like one of those things where it was kind of like two actors that really, really wanted to work together, but they were like, you know, I don't know if it'll ever happen unless we find a different director. So to go with your movie analogy there, I think they both, honestly, it's pretty clear Tom had been planning this exit prior to the start of even last season, as he's mentioned, and that it wasn't that Gronk wanted to stop playing football. It's that Gronk, you know, didn't really want to play for the Patriots anymore. And they almost traded him. You know, Gronk's final year there, he was on his way to Detroit. And Brady stepped in one of the few times Brady's ever stepped in like 20 years. So these guys are obviously both very close. And I think it's just about two dudes that want to go out there and play ball. Because, I mean, you guys know, you've been around these guys long enough. Even when they quit, they all want to quit right after the season ends. And then as soon as camps start opening up, they're like, is there any way I can do this without even going to camp? Because they love something.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ryan, what do you think this does to the legacy of those great Patriots teams? Like, you know, is this year, do you feel like it's a referendum year? You know, if Brady and Gronk go out and win in Tampa, does it kind of undo some of the legacy of Belichick? Or is this just kind of a postscript to everything?
You know, I just think they've done too much that it'd be really hard for me to have any outcome this year where I go, oh, you know, maybe this 20-year run wasn't as great as we thought. You know, I don't know any way I could come to that conclusion. I know that's what's happening. Like, say Brady goes 8-8. Okay, say it doesn't work out. Yeah. Say he's not amazing because his stats were there's some numbers in there collectively. We're like, all right, maybe this is what Bill saw, and he's declining here a little bit. I mean, there's a really good valid statistical argument out there for it. So if Brady goes 8-8, what does that mean? Like, oh man, it was all Bill. Well, no, that's not the case. He's 43 years old. Like at some point, he's not going to look great as a quarterback. And I don't know if that's going to be this year. And as far as Bill, like I know everybody always points to that 11-5-year-old Castle. They were 18-1 the year before. They had the easiest lineup schedule-wise ever. So I'm making this sound like it's anti-Bill, but to do this in this league this long, I just think that 20 years of evidence of both of these guys is going to outweigh anything I see over a few months in this next season.
Ryan Russillo joining us here, giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. Make sure you subscribe to the Ryan Russillo Show podcast on The Ringer. And so let me switch to, you know, we were talking quarterbacks there, and you're right, by the way, on Brady. Statistically, after week four, he was basically the equivalent of Mitchell Trubisky. So he wasn't very good. So that's why I am curious to see how this thing works out. But let's talk draft quarterbacks, because my mind is about to explode here, because I get that Tua's hurt and the hip injury and all that, but there's an inherent risk with everybody you take at the quarterback position, okay? And I just can't fathom a world where someone is going to take Justin Herbert over Tua, because Tua was just so much better at the quarterbacking part of this thing that it's just wild to me that if, like, the Dolphins or even the Chargers pass on him, I'm going to be beside myself. Like, where are you on this Tua-Herbert thing?
I love Tua. Had he been healthy, I liked him better than Burrow. And, you know, I went to five LSU games this year, okay? So I was there for Burrow and Tua. And even though LSU was putting it on him, like watching it in person again, I was like, man, Tua is just something else. You know, being at these facilities and asking guys like what they see, what they saw, and the manipulation from Tua, the way he looks at safeties down the field. And he's doing this as a college kid, going the stuff he does to mess with defenders with his eyes, and where he checks people off and makes throws that you don't even think he was even paying attention to. Like, this is next-level stuff that NFL guys aren't doing. Herbert, we all understand his athleticism, the arm, but if you watched all those Oregon games, despite the really good team season they had, there were a lot of underwhelming stretches where you're like, all right, where's this going? To me, there's no comparison of the two guys. Now, the medicals on this are really, really hard, but as you point out, Susan, like, I did this thing for The Ringer where I went through 20 first-round quarterbacks, okay? 20 years were the first-round quarterbacks. So we're talking a big number here. Over 50% of them are, like, unquestionable busts. Like, first-rounders bust at more than 50%. And I was being nice. I mean, I could have bumped it up even higher if I wanted to be. So if you're telling me, and I don't even think, it wasn't really like, hey, let's blame all the GMs, you guys are idiots. I'm just saying this position is that hard to project. It just is. Like, whatever we do, all the things we put emphasis on, it doesn't always work out. Like, it doesn't matter if a guy has a huge arm. It doesn't matter if a guy's a great athlete. You're trying to figure out what kind of decisions this guy will make in chaos on Sundays, and it's just really hard. And the numbers prove that these guys just miss out. So if you're going to tell me it's a less than 50% success rate on even picking these guys, I'm going to pick the guy, Tua, who I think has been a better quarterback, even if I'm worried that his health isn't the same as Herbert.
You know, I'm trying to project what it's going to feel like to do this draft. So via teleconference or however they're doing it. And, you know, the WNBA draft was the first one to try this. They actually had the highest rating they've ever had. I'm wondering if this draft in the NFL is going to feel the same, look the same, if we actually might start doing things this way after this. If it goes off without anybody's computer freezing or another team trying to hack somebody's computer, like how is this going to go on Thursday?
You know, I think some of the stuff, I think we all kind of like whenever anything that's really important kind of reminds us of our struggles day to day. So when we heard the first mock version of it was a mess,
yeah,
that Cincinnati couldn't get their pick in, everybody's like, oh man, you know, like my office Wi-Fi sucks too, you know. And it's where people kind of like other things that are really special to be messed up. And I get the jokes and I get all that, but I mean, you know, it's not like somebody's going to miss their pick. Okay. They're not going to sit there and be able to say like, oh, sorry, the Chiefs got Tua because, you know, the internet screwed up. Sorry, everybody. You know, it's not going to happen that way. Like, common sense will kick in, as they've already pointed out. And, you know, Schefter, I think, started yelling about it this week, and I liked that he did, where it was just like, hey, look, it's not auto-draft. It's fantasy here. You're not just going to miss out on your pick if there's some glitch. Now, as far as going forward, like, the WNBA number is a big number, but we don't have anything to do. This number is going to be massive tomorrow night. Massive. But I don't know that, you know, whoever's doing the rating stuff and trying to say, well, look at the number that we're selling you for next year's rights. Like, if I were on the TV side, I go, okay, well, I don't know if that number's real or not. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I'd still think the NFL would want to get back to taking this thing out on tour because they were making a lot of money bringing this thing from city to city and having different places bid on it. So I don't know. It's a great question, but I'm not in this rush to think that the world is going to forever change. Because we're dealing with something that, you know, we all hope is relatively temporary here.
Ryan Russillo joining us here. Make sure you subscribe to the Ryan Russillo Show podcast on The Ringer. It's funny with the draft, and I want to switch to NBA here in a second, but like, I feel like we've all been in the fantasy draft where it's like, hey, pause the draft. I didn't mean to take, Mekhi Becton. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanted to take someone else. So it's like, that's kind of what we're going to deal with. I would love to see something like that, but let's switch to the NBA. And Ryan, you know this, you produce content. You've produced content for a long time. You've done radio shows for a long time. I don't know if you've seen this Michael Malone story that came up today from the Denver Nuggets. Did you see this or no?
No, you have to fill me in. Sorry.
Oh, this is great. This, you, as someone who's a talk show host, will appreciate this. It came on the radar and I was like, yes, he said the thing. Thank you. So here's what he said, quote, on a Zoom call with reporters. It's always an ongoing argument about the GOAT. Michael is obviously up there and is the greatest of all time. There are not many Michael Jordans out there. I coached LeBron James for 5 years and have a great relationship with him. LeBron did not have the same mindset or killer mentality that Michael Jordan is supposed to have had. But LeBron James is arguably the greatest player of all time as well. We're not going to care about that last sentence. We clearly are focusing on the previous sentences. In all joking aside, because we knew this debate was happening with this with The Last Dance, but like, I almost feel like LeBron gets bleeped on during this killer instinct debate. Like, where are you on that nonsense?
Well, I actually agree with Malone, so I wouldn't call it nonsense. You know, throughout this entire thing of with MJ, where I've been like, wait a minute, am I doing the thing where I'm shielding all? You know, suggestions that it might not be Jordan. Like, am I doing that thing? No, I'm not one of those guys. I'm not one of those guys going around tweeting out stupid video clips of him getting hard foul, trying to prove that like it was like Braveheart back when they played, because it wasn't. it's the most misguided thing. These games are all out there, kids. It's GOOGLE. You just type in the game from the 90s and you can watch it on a video and you can be like, oh my God, these guys didn't kill each other, because they didn't. And people keep saying it over and over again. It's just not true. I don't blame – I like that Malone actually said something here definitive with an opinion. The LeBron part of this that's frustrating, like if you have to pick one, to be then considered maybe the second best player in the history of the world that's ever played this game, that's not an insult.
No.
I think that's what ends up happening, is that we have to insult MJ to prove LeBron, or we have to – I mean, look, you guys already know all this. If you know how it works, it's become very political. I do think that it's hard to go up against Jordan – because I've gone back and watched some of these games again, and there's a game where everybody's done. Everybody's game three, 91, Lakers finals. Everybody is absolutely toast. He hits that runner to tie it and send it to overtime, and he's been shot. He didn't even play that well, and then it's just like 6 points on layups out of nowhere when no one else seemed to even be able to move their body the way he is. So I'm not saying, okay, that means he's better than LeBron. I think it's really a fair conversation in that ability-wise, I don't think there's necessarily that big of a gap. But yeah, I would put a little bit more of that stuff at the end for Michael, and the fact that, you know, it's just hard to argue against his resume. It's, you know, sometimes it's just as simple as that. So I wish I had like a really, really special answer that you've never heard before. But we've been doing this for like 10 years. So I don't know what else to add to it.
You know what I thought when I listened to Malone's quote, which was, it was like, you know how sometimes when like you and I are talking and we're like walking around the studio and we're like super candid and honest and we're not doing any kind of filtering of like how this might play, or you're not doing any kind of like, oh, I'm speaking publicly on the radio right now, right? Like Malone sounded like that. Malone sounded like, I'm just talking to my buddy and being like, nah, dude, like Michael's the best. He had that killer instinct. He dominated the league in a way that no one ever has. He had that kill, you know, he ripped your heart out. Like he, and then all of a sudden, if you keep reading that quote, there's like this part at the end where he kind of like realizes like, oh, I'm on a call with reporters. And then he sort of like walks it back a little. You keep reading, George, where he says something like, but LeBron, you know, he's great too. He might be the greatest of all time too.
Yeah, like, arguably the greatest of all time as well. Yes.
Right, as well, yeah, as
so,
well.
But like, so Donna, you did. Like, and I get where you're going with it. Like, oh, hey, it's this nonsense again. Like, I was on LeBron's side when he passed Danielle Marshall, okay?
Yeah.
First Take did a thing on him passing in a freaking All-Star game where you just go, you're going to be kidding me. So, you know, I watched the Knicks game 5 in 93, the Charles Smith game the other day, because we're doing these games constantly.
Yeah.
Back and watching him and talking about him. And guess who passes to the corner for a B.J. Armstrong 3 and a drive and doesn't force it? It's MJ.
Right.
Who, you know, a lot of the stuff that's happened to LeBron has been totally unfair, but I guess if we have enough people that either coached or played against MJ, and yeah, there's some guys from the 90s I didn't even want to hear about who played, who are Hall of Famers. I'm like, you're the worst source on anything because you're so incredibly protective of your own era. I don't think it's the end of the world for a few people that were close to it to go, you know, I think maybe this guy was wired a little bit differently than the other guy who may be, you know, the second best to ever play. I mean, I guess I just wish I didn't have to feel like I had to bring up reasons to dump on LeBron.
Sure.
Prop up
sure.
the MJ argument. That's pretty much my whole point.
No,
they're both that special.
Yeah, I totally get it. All right, before we let you go, you've now been in L.A. for a while. This will be a true litmus test as to you're a real Angelino. Did you feel the earthquake yesterday?
Okay. I have a whole sleep monitoring system now. I'm just trying to figure out how bad my sleeping patterns are. And it's constantly like, you didn't get enough again. You didn't get enough again. So last night I was like, I am going to just be out. So here's a two-part. I know you want to hang up on me here, but
no,
I
go.
Squat rack in my garage that I was so mad that once I finished it, I almost killed myself trying to get it upright and then realized it wasn't going to clear the ceiling. So I was in the worst mood. I was incredibly mad, but really this is just not that big of a deal. So I've turned the page and moved on more positive now.
clearly.
I looked at the thing going, all right, you're just going to leave this thing on the side? Like, what if there was an earthquake? You better tighten this thing up or it's going to fall all over your stuff in the garage. This is crazy. This actually happened.
Yeah.
So I spent like another 10 minutes tightening all the bolts, even though I have to take it apart again. I can't believe I did it. And then I woke up in the middle of the night hearing it from a dead sleep, which is pretty shocking. I was like, whoa, what's that? Did somebody crash into my house? And then I was like, oh, my squat rack fell. I can't believe it. I was super mad. Then went downstairs. I was like, wait, was that an earthquake? So that's my earthquake story. It's too long and probably not that great now that I'm
No, it was perfect.
But perfect. By the way, midnight is the middle of the night for you?
I get up really early because I have all this East Coast stuff going on. Yeah, I'm not.
Got it.
Now that I've moved out here, I'm not up till like 2 watching Sacramento games anymore.
I would have pegged you for a night owl. Like, I definitely would have been like, Priscilla's a night owl. Like, you would, you know, I thought you were like a creature. Yeah.
I mean, for 20 something years, 2, 3 a.m. when I finally fell asleep, and I still get up at 7 or 8 the next day, but now I'm up so early now, you know, market moving, trying to make
there you go. Place. Make your coin.
Make your place.
Get that Bitcoin. It's only at 6,800 right now. You know what I'm saying?
You got to make the move. Nothing.
Ryan Russillo. Check out the Ryan Russillo Show podcast on The Ringer, and of course on Sundays with Bill Simmons as well, his weekly stint there on the BS Report. Hey, man, thanks for hanging out with us. Appreciate it. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, guys, stay safe. Thanks for having me.
You got it, man. Take care. There he is, Ryan Russillo. All right, coming up next, Momo, in 4 minutes, I want to talk about the potential of the NBA coming back. And you know what? You're the best person to talk to because you got all the info, all right? So we'll talk to Ramona about that in 4 minutes. Stick around. Sedano, 710 ESPN.